Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
By Goddard, welcome to a live episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast, broadcasting from outside the heart of college football. I am Bart Keeler, here to take your calls and break down the WVU-Baylor game. The phone lines are open. You can call 917-932-1765 to share your thoughts and opinions live on air. Again, that number is 917-932-1765. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket for questions in, and I will answer them live on air. So again, you have a couple of ways to interact with the show, our live show reviewing the WVU game. You can call 917-932-1765, or you tweet at Smoking Musket. In fact, I'm going to send that tweet out right now. So if you follow on Twitter at Smoking Musket, I'm going to tweet out and you can ask your questions there. Questions for the live show. Drop them here. Now that that's set up, again, my name is Bart Keeler. I am representing the Smoking Musket, www.smokingmusket.com. Here to take you through the win over Baylor in Waco. Actually, our first win ever in Waco, Texas. So congratulations to this 2017 edition of the WVU Mountaineer football team. It wasn't all great, even though we won. It was a little bit of a flip-flop of last week, where we had three really good quarters and a really bad quarter. And the bad quarter happened probably at the worst time. It gave a lot of people heart attacks, or at least heartburn, that's for sure. It was a very uncomfortable ending to the game. But whatever I think, that's not the most important thing. I want to hear what you have to say. So call 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket. Ask your questions, express opinions, whatever you want to do. But this is a live show. That's the point. You call in, you give your thoughts. So phone lines are open. You're welcome to call in. Do my answer for whatever you have. Still waiting for y'all to actually have any questions. It's fine. I would like for you to call in, but it's cool. Whatever. To you. But before we get too deep into this podcast, due to take care of some administrative work, obviously need to remind you where you can listen to us. You can listen to us here on blogtalkradio.com/Smoking Musket. We do this live show every Monday every Monday after the game. We will release a recorded podcast, usually Fridays before the game, around noon-ish. It's about when they get put out, just from when we can get it all set up and downloaded and all that good stuff. So Monday's live show, Friday's review show, or a preview show. Usually on Friday, we have some guest from one of our corresponding SB Nation blogs or a reporter from that covers that team. And usually I'm joined by Mike Miller, the site manager of SmokingMusket.com, although that's been a little shaky here and there because his work hates him. It's fine, Mike. We still love you. Love your work. You can listen to us as well on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or TuneIn Radio. You can search the Smoking Musket podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio and find our show there. All of our podcasts, actually, like all of our podcasts are on iTunes. If you want to subscribe there, you can go back and listen to what we said last year about the Baylor game. It wasn't great. Fair warning. We will also be doing basketball coming up soon, as that is kicking off this Friday, I believe, if I have my dates right, which probably I don't, but that's coming up. We won't have a preview for you yet, but we will have one soon. But if you subscribe to all those platforms or you follow us here on blogtalkradio.com, all the content will be there. You can just actually, if you subscribe to us like on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and a TuneIn Radio, you will probably get it downloaded to whatever device you listen to as soon as it drops. So that's an advantage, I guess. If you very much enjoy this podcast, so make sure to like and subscribe to us on those platforms. That would be greatly beneficial. So, again, the number is 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket. Whatever works best for you. We have a few things to talk about regarding this game. But before we do that, I want to share some thoughts from a good buddy of mine who went down to Waco for this game. And he was texting me Saturday morning while they were there. It was raining, actually. He went down, I think they flew down Thursday. Friday they were at the Magnolia Plantation place, you know, Chip and Joanna Gaines from Fixer Upper. And he was there, and I told him don't let his wife buy anything because she'll, you know, probably have to buy everything. But it was fun. Let's see. He starts off, he says, don't get me wrong, I'm having a really good time, but Waco blows. And he said it's a lot like Morgantown in the fact that, you know, it's a little bit of an older city, a little bit, you know, I don't want to say dirty, Morgantown's dirty, but you know what I'm saying. It has an older vibe to it. You know, you're not in a shining new city. It's been there for a while. And he said, it's a lot worse than Morgantown because there's nothing to do there, like at all. Waco is nothing to do there. And apparently no one from Baylor tailgates. Now, I know that your team is 0-7 now, but really? No one tailgates? That's unfortunate. This is college football. You should step your game up. Come on, Baylor. That was entertaining that he said that. He was like, you know, no one tailgates. And he proceeded to tell me, like, the entire time that no one tailgates there at all. And really the only tailgate was at the sponsored one that our alumni association puts on, which I'm not saying it's great, but that's kind of sad that that's the only good tailgate in your city on a game day when it's the other team's alumni association. But I just thought I would share that with you all. You know, I think we're a little, we don't understand how special Morgantown is, especially on game day. And look, I spent a lot of time in Athens. Athens is a great college town, and it's electric on game days too. So I think that we don't realize that not every team and not every city that has a college in it takes it as seriously as we do. So good. Congratulations to all of our WVU alumni and fans who are in the area who, you know, made that trip and took the time and money and wanted to, you know, really represent our team. Well, I thought you did. And from what I could tell on TV, it was actually a pretty decent turnout for our fans for, again, a team, again, you know, our team now 5-2, but they were 0-6 at the time and we were 4-2. And, you know, Waco has not been friendly to us. So good for you all for showing up. Congratulations. But again, this is the Smoking Musket live call-in and review show. That means that you need to call in 917-932-1765. You can call in and ask your questions. And, yeah, it'll be – I promise to try to answer your questions. Is that fair? I think that's fair. If you call in, I'll probably be able to screen you and see you. I might have to ask who you are. if you do call in, I'll probably just read the first like 6 digits of your phone number. So you'll get an area code in your first 3 numbers in your phone number, just because it's easier for me and I don't have to know who you are necessarily. So that's just how it's going to work. So now that we've got that out of the way, dive into this game a little bit. It was a fine start to the game. Honestly, it wasn't the rip roaring start that I think we kind of wanted from this team against an 0-6 Baylor team. But give Baylor credit, they were able to move the ball a little bit on defense, and they were able to kind of slow down our offense. Although I would still argue that our offense kind of slowed itself down a lot this game, which was very, very frustrating. And we'll talk about this. I have a little bit of criticism for Jake Spavital, but you know, overall he did okay. We scored 38 points. We should have scored more, but that's fine. We got the job done, and honestly, up until the fourth quarter, our offense was playing just okay. I mean, they were doing just fine. Everything we needed them to do to win. And it's really weird that we just completely shut off in the fourth quarter. I didn't like that one bit. But we start off the ball, and you know, it's obviously a concern in the Big 12 when you're kicking off and the other team's receiving, because you know the talent and the high quality offenses that everyone in this league has. So for me, I think it was actually a good thing in this case, and I wasn't as worried because I don't think that Baylor has the offensive talent that other teams have. Now, I said they are very good offensively. They're still very good. But I knew for us, if we could hold them or hold them to a field goal, one of those two, our defense was going to be able to feel themselves, get a little momentum, and put pressure on Baylor and a very not great quarterback in Zach Smith, who we'll talk about that a little later on in this podcast, because there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Zach Smith. But we did a good job of holding them on a fourth down play to I think that was the fourth down play. Held them on a fourth and long, four at our 33. So this was what I look. If you're Matt Rhule, you're going for it almost every time on fourth down, if I'm him, to be quite honest, because why not? They got fourth and one earlier in the drive. You know, you expect to make fourth and one. Fourth and four at the opponent's 33, you could kick a field goal, but Baylor doesn't need field goals. They're 0-6 at this point, right? They need touchdowns. And so I thought he did the right thing by going for it, and credit our defense for really putting pressure on Zach Smith and doing a good job to force an incomplete pass. From there, I would have liked our offense to start off a little bit better, but you know, I thought we did what I kind of wanted us to. We tried to focus on the run of the first half. The first drive was a lot of good runs by Justin Crawford. Some really good precision passes by Will Greer to keep the chains moving. I think we did a very good job. To keep keep ahead of schedule for the most part. Greer hit Jennings for a good play, hit Sills for a first down again, used Crawford to kind of set up everything. But then, unfortunately, we were stalled and we had to kick a field goal, which was a little disappointing considering how much we moved and we had just stopped them on downs. You know, you don't have as long of a field. You only had at that point 67 yards that you would have had to go for the touchdown, and we weren't able to do that. We got stopped at their 12. Just outside of the red zone, but it was a successful trip to the red zone, which is kind of been a thing for Dana Holgorsen and his offense, and it's been much improved this year. And I think some of that has to do with him not calling plays. He can, you know, Spav is totally focused on play calling, and Dana's totally focused on being a head coach and understanding situations and stuff. Part of it has a lot to do with, just Will Greer being a little bit better. To be just quite honest, he's a little bit better than what we had last year. And, you know, it's still a successful trip to the red zone. So good start. And then come back out and we're able to hold them on downs again. So Baylor goes twice. Their first two possessions, they turn the ball over on downs. And both of them, they stalled out at about the 35, 30, in between the 35 and the 30, which for most teams, especially in college, is where you're going to have to go for it anyway. Credit our Ben, but don't break defense for doing what they had to do against Baylor. Baylor moved the ball fairly decently. You know, they didn't have too many explosive plays in the first half. In the second half, they did. But they still got the explosive plays they needed. But other than those, they weren't moving the ball in big chunks, which is fine. We were able to hold most of the time. We were able to hold Zach Smith back. Although, with a lot of the penalties that he incurred on his team, it was a little keeping them from marching so well in the first half. And I think that's why that fourth quarter wasn't as shocking to me, because they were still able to move the ball, and they were definitely showing signs of being able to hit the big play. But for the most part, our defense was doing an okay job at minimizing the short plays. So we stop them again. This one was a much longer one. It's like, what, 4th and 9 or 10 or something like that. So again, defense did the job of the whole bid but don't break thing. So that kind of concludes Baylor's first quarter, right? They turn the ball over on downs. Next time, and West Virginia from there goes 9 plays, 66 yards, puts it in the end zone for 6. We're up 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. Very good drive. Again, a lot of Justin Crawford, a lot of good I don't know how to – obviously, we got a little lucky with the pass interference call. The touchdown of David Sills was a great pass by Greer to Sills, and Sills did a great job of being a good receiver, going up and grabbing the ball. But before that, we were moving the ball methodically, right? And I think that's something that Spavital is going to have to adjust to in his offensive play calling. It's not necessarily been in our DNA to hit long, deep plays, big plays, you know, in the past 2-3 years. This air raid offense is supposed to allow you to do that, but Dana has built a team that is much better at getting 3 to 6 yards, maybe even 7 yards of play with our good run game and our pretty quick receivers who can get out quickly. I think Stav's going to have to adjust to that a little bit, because I think his idea of an air raid is you hit, you know, you have short plays that blah, 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 but then you hit the one big one. We did that very well this game, don't get me wrong, but I think he's going to have to say, hey, if we can get 3 to 5 yards a play, and we're going to have to need those longer drives when we go against, and I'm not saying like we need to milk the clock, that's not what I'm saying, but sometimes you need to have a nice, and this was a good one. It was a 9-play, 2-minute and 41-second drive, right? That's a good drive. It's a decently lengthy drive and gives your defense a breather, which they didn't have in that fourth quarter. And it gives your offense a chance to get in rhythm. Again, something we didn't have in the fourth quarter. So pretty good drive to respond to that to the turnover on downs. Through the first quarter, up 10-0, I think as a fan, I was going, you know what, this is a good start. It wasn't the shootout that I wanted in the first quarter, but 10 points in the first quarter on, you know, 2 possessions, pretty good. We didn't even get into the red zone on that second possession. We still were able to score. So a very solid first quarter. If you're grading the team, give them a B for the first quarter, right? Good. You did your job. You did what we needed to. Sure, you know, there were some gaps and everything, but overall, I'm happy with it. Third quarter rolls around and Baylor gets a couple of field goals. And again, it was one of those things where you go, a little bit of a bend, but don't break. They get inside the red zone. I think they had a first and goal somewhere in here. Yeah. And we held them to a field goal inside of the 10. Unfortunately, there we punt after that, and this was kind of concern. We struggled a little bit with penalties when our drive stalled. It was because we kind of did it to ourselves, and again we get a penalty after that field goal, and that makes us punt from our 50. That one's from our 50. Then Baylor answers with a field goal at 10-6. But again, defense does a decent job of holding them and not allowing that final dagger to fall. This one was a little bit longer field goal. I think it was, 30-some yards, maybe 40 yards field goal. So pretty good. We did give up the one big play on that drive, a 45-yard pass to Denzel Mims. Baylor still got talent, and that's we did a decent job for the first three quarters of minimizing that. He got away from us in the fourth quarter, but through the first half, it was okay. We're up 10-6, and we finally stop them very quickly on a three on. They got the ball with like a minute and a half left after one of our punts, with about 2 minutes left, and we stopped them three and out. So we get the ball with a minute and a half left. And if you look at that first, the first couple plays, I think it was telling what the mindset was for this offense. You have the first play, incomplete pass to Gary Jennings. It wasn't a deep, deep ball, but it was one of those like, hey, let's try to get a good chunk of yards here and get out of bounds. Incomplete pass. Well, the second one is a very simple run play to Kennedy McCoy. And he busts up for 11 yards. So I think the plan was, all right, we didn't get it. Let's just try to kind of run the clock out and see what we can do. Well, Kennedy McCoy gets first down, and you're like, hey, we're still in business. And from there, you can kind of see a click a little bit in the offense, because then you go Caron White for 22 yards. Then Will Greer extends the play, gets a couple yards. Then we get Marcus Sims for a first down. Kennedy McCoy again with a nice run. And all of a sudden, we're at the Baylor 22, just outside the red zone with about 14 seconds left, and we call a timeout, which was a very good, quick drive, but it wasn't a furious, 2-minute drill drive. It was just a very rhythmically – our offense was running at a normal pace, and this is the advantage of this offense, that we don't have to do hurry-up because our default is a quick-paced offense. And you saw that on this drive, like, oh, quick, we got to run up to the line and get going because we're trying to – no, it was just, hey, guys, let's go do what we need to do. It helps when guys catch the ball. Obviously, Gary Jennings, but most importantly, Caron White and Marcus Sims got their hands on the ball, held on to it, were able to make plays. So we get a touchdown on an absolutely beautiful play call and a great pass and a great route run by David Sills. So Sills is I think he was the inside receiver on the left side of Greer. And they've got, I think, three defensive backs up there, if I remember correctly. I didn't take enough notes on this one. But it should not have been this easy. Because David Sills beats one guy, and then he's in the – I think he just beat him off the ball, to be quite honest. And then he's in a kind of a skinny post route to the end zone, wide open, and Greer just, kind of darts it in there right as he steps over the goal line. And, that was a perfect ending to this half because you didn't want to get shut out second quarter. Yes, you only got one score in the second quarter, but it was a touchdown, and you take a 17-6 lead going into half, knowing you get the ball back to start the third quarter. All in all, for me, the second quarter was a C, maybe a C+. I'll give it a C. It was a C. But overall, you're going, okay, this is a solid win. If you can hold on, I felt slightly at ease going into the halftime break because of that final touchdown. That was also Sills' second touchdown of the day, and he's up. We'll talk about him a little bit later, but he's doing incredible things. I talked about him a lot on the broadcast, which was nice. So that's halftime, 17-6. Pretty good half for the Mountaineers. Again, this is our Smoking Musket live show. So you call in, review, show, you're supposed to call in. And you can do that by calling area code 917-932-1765. Again, that's 917-932-1765. I do have a question from Chris Arnold at Chris Boom. That's Chris with two S's, Boom underscore on Twitter. He wants to know, $10 question is, Will Greer becomes an NFL Hall of Famer for what team? This takes a lot of prognostication and a lot of conjecture, but he will definitely be a top five quarterback, in my opinion, coming out of next year's draft. He'll go this year for a couple of reasons, but definitely can see him as a top five quarterback next year's draft, which means he will probably not go to, you know, a team like the Browns or – the next 2019 draft, I should say. So he won't be going to, like, a team like the Browns or probably maybe by then the let's see, who's really bad in the NFL? He's going to stay bad. That's the question, because the Browns are going to stay bad. We know that. Maybe the Cardinals. The Cardinals could stay bad, especially when they lose Larry Fitzgerald. Low-key think that by that time we could be seeing a change in – I have my answer without having to say it, without having to think too hard. Chris Arnold, my answer is he's going to become a Hall of Famer with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I say that because I think they'll be in a spot then where they need to draft a quarterback. I think Big Ben is going to be done in 2 years of that. He might be done after this year, so this theory might be moot after that. But Will Greer, not as big as Big Ben Roethlisberger, but he kind of fits that tough, gritty mold. You know, someone who is going to extend plays, someone who's going to be a good offensive mind. So he fits a lot what Ben Roethlisberger does. I'll tell you another one that I could see him doing really well with, and that could be maybe the 49ers or the Rams if the Jared Goff experiment doesn't turn out. I just don't know if he gets to Hall of Fame status with either of those teams, because I don't know if I see an upward trajectory for those teams, but I could see that for the Steelers, to where he has to, you know, he makes a couple NFC or AFC championships games, maybe makes a Super Bowl or two. I'm not saying he's going to win one, but that's the type of franchise he could do it with. Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with the Steelers just because I think they might be in a position to draft him in a couple years, and he'll be in a good position with a franchise that cares about football and wants to make sure they're competitive. So thanks for the question, Chris Arnold. Again, you can tweet at Smoking Musket, or you can call 917-932-1765, and we will answer your questions. Let's see. So we left off at halftime. We're up 17-6, which was, at that point in time, a fairly comfortable lead. It was an 11-point lead. And looking at what we saw in the fourth quarter, but just looking at what we saw in the first half, it was like a lead where you go, okay, you know what? We've got some breathing room. We get the ball to start the second half, and you saw their potential, Baylor's potential. So I think they were knocking at the door. It was like, you know, the first two drives, right? Turned away on fourth down, just outside the red zone. Next, they finally get their field goal, right? So you're like, oh well, they're getting there. It's coming, and so you knew it was coming, but you had that final touchdown. You know, that touchdown on the final drive of the second half, or the first half, excuse me. You get a little cushion, and you know you've got a chance to extend your lead coming out of halftime. So all these things are positives for your team, because Baylor was at this point starting to show some promise, and we just needed to make sure that we were keeping up with it. We come out of the second half, and at this point, it gets really fun as a WVU fan. Fields gets his third touchdown on the day. We haven't had a whole lot of big plays this year. This was a big play. 54-yard touchdown from Greer to Fields, and it was a really, I don't want to say easy touchdown, but once he caught it, and he outran the entire Baylor secondary. I didn't know David Sills had that in him, right? I knew he was athletic and he was quick and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I didn't know he could outrun almost an entire secondary, because he didn't catch that ball far up the field. But credit also Marcus Sims for this is the thing. This is what we need Sims to do on special teams. He's doing a good job as a receiver to help us get big plays, medium to medium-sized plays. You know, he's been a couple of home run threats, but for the most part, he's done good to get us those 10 to 20-yard plays. This is where we need Marcus Sims to step up consistently, though. He gets a 45-yard kickoff return, right? That is what we need from him. We need him to make big plays in the return game because we struggle in that. We still struggle in that. And I don't understand why we don't just kick the ball out of bounds every time. I've seen Evan Staley do it, and he just needs to keep doing it, right? Why are we trying to not do it? Just kick the damn ball out of bounds out of the end zone and take the touchback, put him at the 25. I'll take that every day. We don't need to try to pin teams back. We've clearly shown no ability to do that. Kick the ball out of the end zone, take the touchback every time. But this one, Baylor's not able to get the touchback. Sims picks the ball up at right at the one, right? You know, it doesn't go into the end zone even. 45 yards later, we're in really good position. And that's why this play was, it wasn't a shot, but it was a, let's get across the 50 and let's get going. And you saw what happened. You get a guy in space, and this is what the air raid offense is supposed to do, is put guys in space and watch them go. And what happened? If you were still in the bathroom or getting food, you missed the first touchdown of the second half because it was so quick. Our defense played really well this third quarter. We forced, 3 total punts, right? We did give up a touchdown in the third quarter, but it's okay. We responded to that touchdown, though, it's a touchdown of our own. Point, we're up 31-13. And this one, again, Marcus Sims, this is his home run threat. He's just fast, and he's going to be faster than guys. And when he can catch a ball behind a defense or get in behind a defense with the speed after a catch, he's going to be gone. And he did. The 4.3 speed, he was gone. So, at this point, if you're a Mountaineer fan, you're probably feeling very, very good. You're up 31-13 on the road, rolling. And then we add, for good measure, after forcing a punt, we add on another one. We're up 38-13. Now, we had a really good comeback last weekend, don't get me wrong. But we were only down 11 points, okay? We weren't down 38-13. Y'all, that's 15 points. I'm going to have to do math. 25 points, right? So, yeah, that's a lot to give up. And somehow we managed to almost do it, okay? We're going to have to talk about this. This is probably the last good thing I'm going to say is thank God for Ron White for showing up finally for a couple catches on that drive. He gets a touchdown. Good for him. Before I get into all this, you can call 917-932-1765 to give your thoughts and opinions as I get into the bad part of this this podcast. I'm gonna start getting mad and talking about things that aren't good. So, yeah, 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoky Musket. I have a question here from Justin Mitchell at J_Mitch2197 on Twitter. When do we announce our new sentient overlord? Mitch Vingel picking Notre Dame as a top 5 team this week after Miami? I don't really understand where you're going with that, but – I don't know how to answer that, to be honest, Justin Mitchell. I really don't. Did Mitch Vingel – if you're trying to make reason or rhyme out of Mitch Vingel's comments or what he does, I can't help you there because I am thoroughly befuddled by what he does a lot of times. Notre Dame could be a top five team. I don't agree with that. Miami could be a top five team if they keep winning. Why not? Right? There's no reason for them to not be a top five team. We'll talk about the AP top 25 later on, but I don't understand how that's, you know, not something that's plausible. So thanks for the question, though, Justin Mitchell on Twitter. You can tweet at Smoking Musket for all of your questions, and I'll try to answer them as the best I can. Clearly, that one I wasn't very good at answering, so sorry. You can also call 917-932-1765. Again, that's 917-932-1765. And you can share your opinions here. So we left off up 38-13 and feeling very confident. 25-point lead. There's just no way, right? No way. Well, there was a way. And that way was Charlie Brewer. Again, this is Matt Rhule going, look, y'all, we're about to be 0-7. Screw it. He gives the kid a chance. Brewer, up to this point, hadn't really done much. And to be quite honest, he didn't do a whole lot in this game. I mean, granted, it was, you know, one quarter, but he's only thrown a couple more passes at all this season, right? He threw 13 passes in this game. He only brought his total up to 20. I guess we should have seen this on tape a little better. I don't know. Maybe he had played the last three games against Kansas State, the last two games, Kansas State and Oklahoma State, but nothing really to write home about. I'm very confused why he was able to spark this offense so well, but he did. And you saw it. He threw for 109 yards in one quarter. Sure. That's not super awesome to be. I mean, that's not like the best numbers ever, but give the freshman a credit. You know, he went 8 for 13, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. A lot better than Zach Smith was able to do. I mean, that's actually not fair. Zach Smith had a decent day. He was 16 for 27, but he was making a lot of stupid mistakes. A lot of intentional grounding and all that kind of stuff that it was like, you don't even have to do this. He wasn't giving them any real consistency. Clearly something worked, you know, particularly his rushing, because he ran for 48 yards. So he was able to keep plays alive, I think, a little better. And I think just maybe the change of pace for our defense was a little confusing as well. But that fourth quarter starts, and it's not great. They 23 points. Our defense should be better than that. We had to stop a 2-point lead overtime. That's not great. It's not great defense. But most importantly, it's not great on the offense, okay? That is who I blame for a lot of this comeback that Baylor mounted. I'm blaming a lot of this actually on our offense. I thought our defense, look, we weren't going to hold them forever. And, you know, I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that they did recover the onside kick, which sucked. But where was our offense this half, right? Because after we scored to go up 38-13, our drive chart, 4 plays, 20-yard punt. 3 plays, negative 3 yards, punt. 5 plays, 16 yards, punt. 1 play, negative 2 yards for the end of the game. Where was our offense? You're telling me that after we scored our 5th touchdown of the day, we only managed to get, let's see, that's 33 yards. That's bad. We didn't score at all in the fourth quarter. When we didn't even need to score, to be quite honest. You know, after they had those back-to-back touchdowns talk about explosive plays. We finally gave up some explosive plays. Ebner for the 52-yard touchdown.
And then he, again, on the 42-yard touchdown. One was a run, one was a pass. Those are definitely on the defense, yes. But after that, offense, guys, this, and this is on Jake Spavital too, because, like, we just have to milk. I mean, at this point, it's like, okay, hey, let's try to milk the clock, get the defense off the field, and wait, run the clock. Our first full possession in the fourth quarter came after Baylor had scored, you know, 14 points in a row with us not even getting a possession of the football. Starts off with the Kennedy McCoy run for 3 yards. That is a decent start to a drive that you know you have to milk the clock, right? Then Greer gets sacked or something. It was a sack, basically. Why are we passing the ball there? Just run the ball again. Try to run 25 more seconds off the play clock. This drive in three plays only lasted a minute and 42 seconds. Now, that's not good at all. Granted, we got to run the ball, you know, we technically ran the ball twice, but, you know, then you're at third and 13 and Will Greer's incomplete pass. So, this was a drive that I thoroughly did not understand the play calling, because I don't think there was a reason to go this quick on offense. I would have rather on third and 13, just a nice draw play like we're used to doing. And I know, part of that was, you know, we definitely got found out against Texas Tech that teams are banking on that, and that's fine. But why not just either just run the ball or run a draw play, get a couple seconds, you know, more off the game clock? Why? Then, so we punt, Baylor gets a field goal. They're up, now it's 38-30. Like, they're legit back in this game all of a sudden, and we have done nothing on offense in this fourth quarter. Our next drive, we punt it again. Five plays, 16 yards, a minute and 33 seconds. We were in five plays and somehow ran less time off the clock than we did in the three-play drive. Okay? Why? We had run the ball. I think this drive makes me more frustrated, because I remember watching this and was like, why are we passing the ball? Kennedy for 7 yards. Wellman for 6 yards. Wellman for 3 yards. Oh, let's pass the ball. No! Keep running the ball. We're in decent field position now, right? We're at the, 46. We're on just on our side of the halfway line, right? Of midfield at the 50. We are just on our side of the 50. We have run the ball three times in a row for a total of 16 yards, right? That's a decent average. I know Baylor is, you know, banking on it. That's fine. Run the ball and milk the clock. At this point, it's a momentum thing to kill their momentum, give them less time to mount a comeback, and give your defense a break. Five plays is not good enough. Our defense at this point was pretty gassed. If you have thoughts about this, call the Smoky Musket podcast. Call me here, 917-932-1765, because I'm gonna start throwing stuff and I'm not even watching the game. That was just bad. It was bad play calling. It was stupid. Then, so we punt the ball. Baylor gets a really nice drive, 16 plays, 86 yards. Goes down the field, scores a touchdown. A lot of Charlie Brewer passing and running. Good for him, whatever. Luckily, we're able to break up the two-point conversion, recover the onside kick, and just need the ball to take the win. But we had a 25-point lead and only escaped Waco with a two-point victory. And that is on coaching. That is on offensive play calling and offensive coaching. That's what that is. I'm not going to put all the blame on our defense, right? I'm just not. That is on coaching. Any questions, you can ask them on Twitter at Smoking Musket. Go ahead and if you have any more questions, we got about 15 minutes left here. I'm going to go over a few stats and then hit the Big 12 roundup, and then we'll be out of here. Baylor actually outgained WVU 497 yards to 493. Again, a lot of that was in that fourth quarter, but we struggled on the ground. Why? Crawford 10 for 30, McCoy 7 for 55. Obviously, McCoy was the back for most of the fourth quarter, which is very unfortunate because we had in that second half a lot of guys running the ball, and it wasn't Justin Crawford. I think that was a little bit of a problem. I think if Crawford were able to stay in the game for longer, we may have been able to maybe – he probably would have had – obviously would have had more yards, but I think he would have been able to keep drives alive better for us maybe. I don't know. McCoy did do a bad job, though. Still don't know why we didn't run the ball more in that fourth quarter. Whatever. Let's see. We'll talk about David Sills last, but Will Greer had a decent day. I mean, no interceptions, 5 touchdowns. That's a great day, right? Like, what? This is why it's frustrating that we let them back in, because we were, up until the fourth quarter, doing everything right. I don't know. Will Greer completed a pass in the fourth quarter. I want to look this up now. You're going to have to do it. He did a pass to Caron White for no gain at the end of the third quarter. Nope. Did not complete a pass in the fourth quarter. So, not at all what you want from your star quarterback, but I think that's the other frustrating part, is that our offense just didn't get the job done, right? You just need them to keep the ball for about 2.5 minutes and get a field goal, and you feel much better. QBR wasn't great, 85.4. He averaged 10.1 yards to throw. He had 375 yards of passing, which was more than both Smith and Brewer. But didn't get it done in the fourth quarter, man. Got to get it done in the fourth quarter. McCoy, 7 for 55 rushing. Cropper, 10 for 30 rushing. Decent days by Petway, 4 for 16, and Tevin Bush got a nice carry for 16 yards as well. Credit Elijah Wellman for a couple of runs there in the fourth quarter. Our receiving corps actually had a very good day, and I thought it showed a good depth across all four of our top receivers. Still, 7 catches, 136 yards for 3 touchdowns. Gary Jennings, no touchdowns, but 8 catches for 116 yards, proving that he's kind of Mr. Reliable. I think Greer found Jennings and Sills a lot to this game, and it worked out well. Marcus Sims, 3 catches for 71 yards. That's what he does, and he caught a touchdown. If that's the stat line every game from here on out, that's pretty good. I wasn't impressed with Caron White today, but he did get a touchdown. It ended up being the game-winning touchdown. So props to that, 4 for 33 in total. Denzel Mims for Baylor, 7 for 132, but no touchdowns. It was Tristan Ebner who he had a 52-yard touchdown catch and then a 40-some-yard run for his 2 touchdowns. He had a total of 3 touchdowns on the day. You know, that you can't let one guy hurt you like that. He had 3 carries for 54 yards and a touchdown, but the touchdown was a long 40, so 2 other carries for 7 yards each. It was frustrating how easily they were able to move the ball in that fourth quarter. They had I don't know what more to say other than it was incredibly frustrating. There was no reason to give up 23 points in a quarter. Just not. So West Virginia moves to 5-2. Baylor's at 0-7. I think, you know, what it means for Baylor is, I think you found your quarterback for the rest of the season. You are for sure not going to a bowl game now, but that doesn't mean you don't have other things to play for, and that's okay for Baylor. I mean, they can still have, you know, not a terrible season. I don't think it will go 0-12. I don't think that. They have a game against Texas, Kansas, Iowa State, even Texas Tech. I think those are winnable games, especially if Charlie Brewer is playing the way he played against us. I don't know if he has that out for an entire game, but, you know, he definitely showed some. For West Virginia, we're in the top 25 still. We move up to 22. We're 5-2 now. And we're one win away from bowl eligibility. We definitely have our five of the top seven toughest games of our season are coming up, right? Probably the next toughest is going to be Oklahoma State at home. Then we play Iowa State at home, which has been announced a 3:30 kick on November 4. So that's decent for us. We get a home game that's not a noon game. And then we got Iowa State, Texas, Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas, and then Oklahoma. So I think the most winnable of all of those is Kansas State, but that's in Manhattan. Texas at home should be winnable. Their defense is fine, but they're, you know, I don't know if their offense is going to get going. And with Sam Ellinger possibly out for a game or two, we don't know. But you have five games to get to six wins for a bowl. And at this point, you could even say, look, we can get to eight wins and have a decent bowl game. And I've said eight wins is a very good season for this team, I think. We're not going to get 10. I don't think that's in the cards for us, and that's okay. But if we can get to eight wins, that's a really solid season. I don't want seven. I think seven is too much of a regression. And it's kind of the meme for what Dana Holgorsen is. You don't want to go on your best season. I mean, yeah, okay, whatever. 2011 was his best season, but let's be real. I mean, Big 12 versus Big East. Yeah. So you don't want your best season in a new conference and then go back to your, you know, your basically your average. But you've got 3 to 4 winnable games. I think only a lot or two out there. But you have to be careful. It could be 3 if you don't show up to play for every single one of these games. But we're on pace to make a bowl and probably a decent one. All right, so with about 5 minutes left, I'll hit the Big 12 real quick, and then I'll get out of here. Appreciate you listening in. If you are listening to this live show, it's the Smoking Musket Podcast live call-in and review show. This week we are looking back at the Baylor game from Saturday. But now let's look at what the rest of the Big 12 did on Saturday. Very interesting results. I don't think there is one that I think went the way that we thought it would, but everything else was just a very interesting day, and I think it showed a lot about the teams who played in it. First up, Oklahoma State 13, Texas 10. I don't know what Oklahoma State was doing. Texas's defense is fine, but Oklahoma State was not great this game at all, and really struggled to hold any offensive momentum. Had to go to double overtime against Texas, right? Or no, excuse me, just one overtime against Texas. To squeak out a win, and it was because Sam Ellinger threw an interception at the very end, right? That's why. But other than that, not a great day for Oklahoma State. This one was a shock. Iowa State 31, Texas 13 down in Lubbock. Texas Tech 13 down in Lubbock. That shocked me. I thought Texas Tech could handle Iowa State. I thought they would be able to score. Wow, they did not. So my question, and I don't know the answer personally, because I just don't, was this more about Iowa State or Texas Tech? Because I think this might be more about Iowa State at this point. They looked really good, and this is the third game in a row where they've really been good. And that is a concern, as we have a very decisive game against them coming up in 2 weeks. Oklahoma State 42, Kansas State 35. OU's offense looked good. Man, that defense is really not okay. That gives me a little hope when we have to go down to Norman and play them. Don't know. Don't know about that one, to be quite honest. Their offense is good, but good Lord, they're giving up Giving up a lot of yards. They gave up a lot of yards. And outside of that Oklahoma, that Ohio State game, and obviously their games that they played against nobodies, their conference games, they've given up a ton of points. So I don't know what that's going to do for us. This one, I don't think it was shocking, but good Lord, Kansas. 43-0, TCU goes and just wallops Kansas. I knew TCU scoring 43 doesn't surprise me, but it kind of does. I don't think their offense would be able to score that much. But Kansas being just absolutely inept is a little bit shocking. And that's 2 weeks in a row they've been blanked. Oh, boy. Not good for David Beatty and his crew there. I don't know if that's the answer. Maybe I don't know. Kansas is in a world of hurt and haven't shown any improvement as the season's gone along. All right, so that brings us to our Big 12 conference standings. I said some things would get figured out, but quite honestly, there's still a logjam. TCU at 4-0 and 7-0 overall is number one, but after that, you've got Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and West Virginia. Four teams, all 3-1 in the conference. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State at 2-3, respectively, both at 6-1. Iowa State at 4 at 5-2. West Virginia at 5 at 5-2. So we're in the top half. Definitely, I think, in that second or third middle tier, but West Virginia is in a good place. We're fifth in the conference. I think we can finish anywhere between fifth and third, to be quite honest. I think that's a realistic expectation, which is better than what the media picked us. Behind us is Texas, 2-2 in the conference, right? Not bad in the conference, but they're 3-4 overall. Defense has improved. Offense still looks out of whack. Texas Tech, holy, what a good start they had, but I think it definitely was fool's gold because they're 1-3 in the conference and now 4-3 overall. They have lost two in a row. And this has not looked good for, what, 5 quarters in a row now. Kansas State 1-3, 3-4 overall. Maybe not the team that we thought they were going to be. Kansas 0-4, 1-6 overall. And then Baylor is in last at 0-4, 0-7 overall. Is all I have to talk to you guys about this week as we recap the WVU Baylor game. Again, West Virginia got the win 38-36 after being up 25. They made a meal out of that game. This has been a Smoking Musket podcast. You can find us on Smoking Musket or subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. You can also visit www.smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions on WVU sports. You can go there and see kind of – I like our hot take slash kind of cold take, but they're very good take articles after our games. You can go and read those content every day at www.musket.com. Look out for our preview of the Oklahoma State game. That is a noon kick in Morgantown. We'll have that out for you on Friday. I will be joined by Mike Miller. Right for free. So for this podcast. It's been fun talking to you on this live show, and as always, goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.